If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This week's episode comes with a content warning. This week we are going to be talking about food, and we know that food and disordered eating can be a triggering topic. For those in recovery from eating disorders, for those still suffering, and for those who are really struggling to rid themselves of the strong association our society has made between food and morality, we wanted to give you a heads up. While much of the episode will be lighthearted, there will be discussions of disordered eating and our relationship with food in the past. We will, of course, aim to do this in a responsible way, but if that will be a difficult listening for you right now, you might want to give this one a skip, and we will see you next Tuesday.
Hello, and welcome to Fat Chat, the podcast that exceeds your recommended daily allowance. And this week, we're going to be talking about food.
I'm Hayley from Curves and Curls, and I'm an acquired taste.
Very much so. I'm George from Fuller Figure, Fuller Bust, and please, sir, may I have some more?
And I'm Rifki from Slink Magazine, and you will always find me in the kitchen. Just a quick shout out to our incredible patrons. Thank you for your support of the pod. We cannot do this without you. If you'd like to join our magical squishterhood, support the pod and get loads of fab extra content, head to the link for our Patreon in the episode notes or find us on Patreon by searching for Fat Chat. And don't forget to follow us on social media. We're at Fat Chat Pod on Instagram, Twitter and Facebook.
So this, guys, I think it's such an important and loaded topic for plus size people.
Definitely.
And like this week, we're going to be starting this conversation about food, but it is kind of going to be a tip of the iceberg situation. And we're definitely going to like come back to revisit this and talk about it in different ways. So this is just a starter and a move boosh, if you will.
A first helping.
Tip of the iceberg lettuce. Yeah. And, you know, food is so important in making memories. There's obviously a lot of nostalgia around certain dishes for people and for creating community. And, like, that's something we wanted to delve into with this week's episode. So tell me, guys, what is your earliest food memory?
My earliest food memory is kind of a funny one. So when my little brother was born, I was at home with my older brother, and I just remember really vividly sitting on the couch eating sour cream and chive Pringles and my dad coming in to tell me that I had a new little brother and me saying, but I've already got a brother. I wanted a sister. I don't want that one.
No. I don't want a brother, yeah. But I will take some more Pringles.
Yeah. But you know what? Weirdly, it's my least favourite flavour of Pringle in the world now. Like, I can't stand them, but I just, yeah, it's such a vivid, fond memory. I'm super close with my younger brother now. I got over it. But yeah, it's such a vivid memory. What about you, Hayley?
Funnily enough, mine also relates to my little brother. So my very first memory ever, I was 2.5, which is crazy young, I think, to have your first memory. Mm-hmm. I was like sitting at the dining room table, must have been in my high chair or something like that, and I was having my dinner and my mum's water broke. So she was like, we have an open dining room, living room, and I just remember this moment so extremely. It was like this big dramatic moment, obviously, and then everybody rushed into panic stations and stuff like that to get my mum to the hospital. I don't really remember anything beyond that, to be honest. My next memories are quite further away from that, but that's my very first memory associated with food. Yeah. What about you, G?
Mine is also one of my like quite early memories. So I've suffered a lot with eczema my whole life. It's something I've spoken about on multiple other episodes. And when I was younger, my parents tried to cut dairy out of my diet because that's meant to be something that can cause it to flare up. And so this is a memory with my real mum who passed away when I was 4. So it's quite a special memory. I just remember her trying to introduce me to butter for the first time because I was always on like margarine and other things then, and I can safely say a lifelong very happy relationship was formed that day because I friggin' love butter. It's so good.
Like, you'd mainline butter if you could, like straight into your veins.
Perfect ratio if you're having bread and butter is 50% bread, 50% butter. Like, Yeah, agreed. I just love butter. I love it.
I mean, it goes to show that all of our memories with the food is definitely around family, I think. Mm-hmm. Like those, obviously, they're going to be around in your earliest memories anyway. But I think food can really be associated with your family and stuff. I think we all have such strong memories just of growing up with food.
I think between the three of us, we've got some traditions and home dishes and things that are really strongly associated with where we've come from. For example, Rivki, I mean, tell us about some of your traditions being, you know, raised by a Jewish family and having those sort of Jewish traditions.
Yeah, I think in Jewish tradition, food's so important. And every festival, every occasion, I suppose similar to Christmas, we just kind of have it like several times a year.
I need to be Jewish.
Every,
that was amazing.
Every festival, every event has some kind of food associated with it. And it's really funny because I kind of use them as ways of explaining my traditions to people, because I think those are things people can relate to. So rather than maybe tell them the more religious aspects, I'll be like, oh yeah, it's the festival where I'm not going to be at work for a couple of days, but I do eat cheesecake. That's clearly not the main part of the festival, but it's the thing that I feel I can tell people that they'll be like, oh cool, and they'll relate to it. And then, you know, I've always tried to bring in those traditional foods to work and things around those times. But I think Friday night dinner, similar, I suppose, to the television show of the same namesake, if you're in the UK, it's that very like traditional once a week meal that's delicious. But the whole idea is about having family together and spending time together. But just to give you a little taster, because hey, we love talking about food, you know, you have like chicken soup and roast chicken and roast potatoes. Yes. But like, yes. Even it's such
don't
a good
stop,
meal.
Don't stop, Rivki, don't stop.
Such a good meal. But even amongst Jews, it depends on where your family come from. You know, if you're like, my family are more Eastern European, so those are our traditional foods. But if you were more like a Middle Eastern Jew, then you would have completely different kinds of foods. So it is so steeped in like those recipes that pass down, and really and truly it is about those making memories and coming together.
Because I think you said that you and your boyfriend, despite both of you being Jewish, because you were saying you both come from different places, his Friday night dinner looks a little bit different to yours. Is
yeah,
that right?
He still loves chicken soup and roast chicken and roast potatoes, because you know, he's not weird,
good lad.
But but then there's more like obscure traditional Eastern European Jewish foods, more like things like gefilte fish or chopped liver, which I think are delicious, and he just is like, they're disgusting, what are you talking about? But it's fine, really? More for me, I don't have to share it. And that's what I told him.
Like, I think because George has definitely got like a unusual palate, and I think so much of that is around what you grew up eating, and also that what we find unusual with what other people eat is often just because we weren't exposed to it. And yet to you, you're like, but it's not weird. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah. My dad remarried, and my stepmom, her parents are from Latvia and Estonia. And even though they came over during the Second World War as refugees, they kept hold of those traditions. And obviously, as the years went on, it became a lot easier to buy those kind of foods in the UK. So yeah, lots of pickled herring and sauerkraut and eel and all of that. I've grown up with like so many different types of food. I've grown up sort of like learning to cook by like taste and smell rather than looking at sell-by dates or recipes too much. Like that's how it very much is. And speaking of chicken, something that I know kind of grosses Hayley out. In the world food section in Sainsbury's, I get a lot of stuff. My grandpa's now passed away, but he loved it too, actually, the stuff I would get from there. And for my granny, I get chicken in a jar.
I'm so fascinated by this. So fascinated.
It's like shredded chicken in its jelly and juices. You can either have it cold or hot. I was also a little bit skeptical, but then I made like a risotto for my granny and we heated the chicken up and put it on top. And it's just like really yummy, tender chicken that happened to come out of a jar. It's so good. I think it's no different from having chicken in a packet.
I think it's like the jelly. I think when jelly gets introduced to savory foods, I struggle.
I love a pork pie with the jelly. I love a chicken pie. Hayley, tell us yours.
So South African, a lot of, obviously my family is quite British, so a lot of the stuff isn't unusual. Although with my brother like marrying into an American family, you start to realize what we have that they don't have, or what they have, which is like normal to them. It's just really, really interesting. Mm-hmm. And then with South African cuisine, like so much of it is based around meat. It's a very meat heavy diet. And I find that like one of the peculiarities or delicacies of South African food is biltong, which is like a, it's like a cured meat, but it's not being cooked. Traditionally, it would be like rubbed in herbs and spices and then hung out on a tree in the bush until it dried out in like a dry bit of the bush somewhere in South Africa. And then when it is so delicious, and I think people compare it to beef jerky. It is the Rolls Royce of beef jerkies. But yeah, when you're explaining that to somebody, I get it. They're like, oh, really? And then I find that men take to it much quicker than women do. Something about the meatiness, I think, generally. But yeah, it's quite funny how people can be weirded out by things that you just grew up with and have been eating since you were, you know, a baby, basically. Mm-hmm. Basically, you need to have teeth to eat biltong.
Yeah, I tried it for the first time last year, actually. It was nice.
How did you find it?
Yeah, it was really nice. I know loads of people. My sister-in-law loves biltong as well. I know loads of people that love it.
Yeah, and because there is quite a big population of South Africans in London, so you can get hold of it quite easily here. But I know that like when friends go and live in other places where it's not so easily gotten hold of, that is like the gold dust that they want you to bring over, or that they almost always find some weird way to make. but yeah, and I think like at home, my mum is an incredible, she's a cook, like rather than a chef, like she's a real home cook, but she has such a natural gift for it. She's definitely passed that on to my brother and I, like we can both cook. And so many meals, like my mum makes the most incredible lasagna in the world.
I want it's
so good. I refuse to have lasagna in restaurants because it's so tasty what my mum makes. It's just, if my mum was making lasagna, I just knew it was some sort of a celebration. It was somebody's birthday, we were having people over for a party, it was famous. Lucy's lasagna back in Durban was like famous. People were like, oh, is Lucy having a party? That means she's cooking, that means there'll be lasagna. So yeah, and so even now for me, it's just such a like comforting thing to return to those traditional meals. And I think as we move through this episode, we're going to talk about when we kind of come across a loss of innocence in food and start to think about it. But you've got to hold on to some of those beautiful memories that are created around the food and how the taste of things can take you back to a moment or make you feel at home.
Definitely. And I think it is, as you say, something we'll touch on, but this is why I have a struggle when people demonize certain foods, because I'm like, food is about making memories or going to a new place or bringing back that nostalgia, as we said in the intro, and just enjoy it for what it is. I'm such a foodie. I enjoy everything about it. Yeah, we would love to hear more from you guys about your traditions. Maybe you've got similar ones to sort of things that we've mentioned here. Maybe you've got some totally different traditions. Maybe you've got like a mixed up family and this tradition meets that tradition. Tell us about it. Tell us on the Fat Chat community on Facebook or hit us up on Instagram, Twitter and Facebook at Fat Chat Pod.
There are so many beautiful, positive associations with food that we all share. George and Riv are like they were saying earlier, like mega foodies. They literally could spend the entire train journey to Nottingham, back when we used to be able to leave our homes, talking about food. But I think any episode, particularly about being plus size and food, we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about some of the complicated relationships around food. We've spoken before about how this morality around food can sort of start to creep in, and this leads to like really skewed ideas about what food is about and about what you should be eating. For you guys, when did some of these negative thoughts start appearing?
I think it was definitely as early as 8. If not, actually, I've thought about this after we just discussed this. It could have even been before, but I think it was probably before that. It was, you know, pointed out that I was a slightly rounder child than others. Mm-hmm. Do you know what? I don't even know if there was a particular reason. I think I associated with like the age of 8 because we moved and there was a really big snacking culture in the school that I went to. And we hadn't really had that much in the way of sweets and chocolates at home. But now there was kind of that much more snacking. And it was kind of how I had to then integrate myself with new children, because I was only 8 and I'd moved to a different area, new school, everything was different. It's funny because now I'm not really into sweets or chocolate at all. As you know, I'm a foodie, and I'm not
into me every time you say it,
and I'm not into sweet things. But yeah, I think I probably just overindulged, and then it just became a bigger problem. But that was how people seemed to communicate in the school that I went to, was through snacks. So I just, when I was young, I remember in my first school, it was like we used to eat grapes and things at break time. And then in this school, it was all very much like chocolates, crisps and things like that. And then I think it just kind of spirals because you want to fit in because you're the new kid who needs to make friends.
So much. And we've also talked before about how food can be so comforting and things like that. And I think you're a new kid at a new school wanting to fit in and possibly needing some comfort. It's not that surprising that you may have found some of that in food.
What about you, George?
I was actually quite a skinny child, which I still find weird when I see photos of myself. And then I remember being on holiday. So I think I would have been 12 because I remember I was in Latvia and it was Riga 2000. So yeah, born in 88, I would have been 12. And I just remember my body looking different, feeling different, and walking along the street with my stepmom, my mum, and sort of like saying stuff about it. And she was like, it's just puppy fat. It's just puppy fat. Maybe you should be eating a bit less though, if you know, you're worried about getting fat. And that's when it sort of became a thing. I realized that food equaled a body change. Restricting food equaled a body change. I mean, I never did restrict my food. It just so happened that at that point I was about to hit puberty and the boobs and the bum came in, and my body did change from being a child body to sort of a, like a more womanly teenage body. Until that point, it's something you spoke about on an episode before, but it's like the veil gets lifted and you're suddenly like, oh, okay, I need to be careful. A bigger body is not good. Eating less is good. And then you start to make those associations, which kind of scary to think. I mean, scarier even to think how young you were, Rivki, because I still felt really young at 12.
I was also around 12 and also away on a holiday with my dad to the States. We were away for like 6 weeks or 2 months or something. And my dad was like a bit of a pusher when it came to snacks. He was a snacker, so he loved to have snacks around the house. Well, boat, we were on his boat actually. And there was always chocolates and crisps, and my brother was always like quite a slim child, so he could just eat whatever and like never ever put anything on. But I was also having those body changes, as well as like we didn't really have much snacking going on back at home at my mum's, so this access to all these different sort of foods, I was like, oh, I must have them all now. And I think it's weird because there were fat people in my family, like a mixture of slim and fat people, but I was definitely made to feel that fat wasn't okay. And so as I was putting on this weight, very much felt like it was the worst thing that could happen. And so then discussions around eating started to really change, and it was like, I'm allowed to eat things because I have access to them, but I'm also judged for eating them as well, because like, well, should you really be having that? Or, you know, shouldn't you be switching to a diet soda or have some kind of juice instead of this? But obviously it was one set of rules for my body and another set for my brother's, because his wasn't putting on weight. And you just start to get quite mixed signals. And I don't think it was done with any bad intention on my family's part. They felt they were doing the right thing, but the after effects of those things, they echo quite far into our lives sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I still feel those disordered eating effects now. I think round about then I started to like maybe like sneak things to eat sometimes, eat a bit in secret, hiding chocolate bar wrappers down the side of the sofa or something like that. And that's definitely something that I find myself going back to when I feel in any way judged or something like that. And it's because maybe I feel like in certain scenarios I felt like I couldn't eat things. I don't know. I feel like it keeps echoing on. Like, have you guys had that at all?
The chocolate bar wrapper down the sofa. This is a story that still makes me cringe. So in mine and Robbie's old flat, we had a sofa that was like fourth hand. And it wasn't even so much a sneak eating thing, but I would just sit sometimes and like just sometimes shove the wrappers down the side of the sofa. But
you
then
animal.
It got to the point where I was like, yeah. Because I knew that like when we were moving out in a year or so, we'd just get rid of that sofa. And yeah, I was an animal, lazy animal. When we did move out, we nearly couldn't get the sofa out, and I was moving it out with my friend, and she was like, we're gonna have to take the sides off this sofa. And I was just like, oh my god, I thought it was gonna be like a Noel's house party where they're in that phone box and there's just money everywhere. It would just be that, but with like sweet and chocolate and crisp wrappers, because then it felt really shameful. It was lazy and a bit shameful, but definitely that was a way of me not putting those in the bin and like having people see that those wrappers are in the bin. That's still something I still get a bit embarrassed by, how much I've eaten, or people seeing how much I've eaten, eating in public, things like that.
Sometimes you're hiding it from other people, and sometimes you're also hiding it from yourself. That's crazy. That's that internalized fat phobia, you know, we've spoken about before.
Mm-hmm. I thought you just couldn't be bothered to go to the bin, George.
Both of it, like all of it, like seeing it in the bin, walking to the bin, being confronted with how much I've eaten, a bit of everything in that sofa.
What happened to the sofa?
Oh, I fucking got that thing out. Like, the strength came upon me and I got that thing out the flat. Like, I was like, no fucking way are we taking the sides off this fucking sofa.
Just imagining, like, the whole Friends pivot situation round about now.
It was literally pivot. That. Then, a charity, I paid for a charity to come and, like, take that from the street. So, like, somewhere... That fucking sofa is festering with all my wrapper.
I could just, I love imagine that. You. It's a bit like when mums find the strength to like lift cars off their babies. You found that strength. You were like, I will not have this be my last like my
and
lasting
how
impression.
How sad is that? Like that's my shame in that sofa.
Somewhere in the UK, someone got that sofa and wondered where all those chocolate bar wrappers came from.
I hope not. That sofa was knackered to fuck.
What about you, Riv?
Oh, it lasted for such a long time. I mean, I have to say, I really don't feel like I have it anymore, particularly. But for a long time,
that's
there
amazing.
Was not wanting to. I used to hate going to restaurants with my family because I hated eating in front of people. There was dietitians and Weight Watchers and like the whole shebang, but I think going through all of those and then coming out the other side, sometimes things still fester. Like I became a vegetarian for literally about a decade because on Weight Watchers meat was less points, so and it was always
that
about
chicken soup.
Yeah, I know. Oh my gosh, the first time I decided to eat meat again and said to my mum that I wanted chicken soup, that woman left the house quicker than I've ever seen her move before. She was like, finally my child's eating meat again. But yeah, I was a vegetarian for so long and everything was so controlled, and I think I've just got to a place where I can like balance it all now. But I still hate seeing like too much mayonnaise on a salad or something. It will still make me shudder slightly because it will just, yeah, freak me out a bit. But generally, I think I've definitely come through the other side after years of fairly crazy food things that I'm sure we will talk about in another episode one day. So this week's self-care tip is obviously about food, but more about how delicious and amazing food is. And we think that you guys should learn a new recipe, whatever you fancy, whatever your level. Maybe you're super confident in the kitchen and there's something you've been putting off. Try it. And maybe you're really not. Find something easy and simple and try that too. Enjoy preparing food. Maybe do it with someone else in your household or link up with friends on Zoom, cook together, and just really enjoy having some time away from screens and like the busyness of your day. And maybe we'll share some of our favorite recipes over on social media as well.
I want to make the chicken soup.
I will give you my chicken soup recipe.
Yes.
That's love right there.
So, as you know, every week we give you some fashion advice from our very own Rivki. And what have you got for us this week, Rivki?
Well, we are in hot weather season. I mean, obviously the UK is temperamental. You might be listening to this in the middle of summer and it might piss with rain. But in theory, we're in hot weather season, which means shorts. Let's get those legs out.
Riv, not even joking, sitting by my back door here in the kitchen and it has just started pissing with rain. Yep. Thanks for that, Riv.
Standard UK weather.
The mere mention of shorts and the clouds just empty themselves immediately.
The clouds are like, what? Plus size women in shorts? No, here is some rain. Fuck you. So shorts, do you know what, it used to be a summer item, I think, that plus size women just couldn't find, but actually, like with most of the industry, we've come a long way and shorts are back and they're out, and you can get shorts also of various different lengths. So whether you're super confident and you're ready to get your legs fully out and want to go for some denim short shorts, or if you want to go for a more tailored look, maybe it's a new departure for you. Go for some slightly longer line, more tailored shorts. And they're actually a really nice alternative for work during the summer and like a slightly chic summer look. You know, even go for like a cropped culotte or a crop trouser as a kind of bridge gap as you're getting towards short season. I'm going to post my favourites over on social media at Fat Chat Pod on Instagram and Facebook. But whether you want denim shorts, short shorts, or tailored shorts, I'm going to find some for you.
Get your legs out.
Get them out.
So guys, what would you say your relationship is like with food now? Sort of what things have helped make it better? What are the hang-ups and the hangovers you still have from how food was sort of introduced to you and the associations you made when you were younger? And obviously all of us have grown up a little bit chunky, so we've had different experiences maybe. Hayley, what would you say your relationship is like now?
A little bit chunky, a little bit funky.
Yeah.
I think, you know, it wasn't just about how I grew up, because I think in many ways my mom had a really healthy relationship with food, which she modeled pretty well, but a lot of it was about external forces and the way it's been discussed everywhere else. It's a lot of it's about diet culture. And I think it's still something that I struggle with, not in with limiting with myself, but with trying to have a very clear understanding of what my body needs. So I know, George, you're going to come on to talk about intuitive eating. Mm-hmm. And it's something that I really like the idea of, but I think it's something that's going to take active work to get to the place where my body and I can really communicate with each other and where I know what I need. When I'm unwell, obviously I've spoken quite a lot about my mental health on the podcast. And when I'm struggling, I find that looking after myself from a nutritional point of view is one of the first things that goes out the window. Mm-hmm. I'm prioritizing meals just doesn't happen, and I start to get very lazy around meal times and stuff like that, which inherently isn't a bad thing, but it can mm-hmm. be when it affects negatively on my health or on the way that I'm feeling. You know, I'm trying to be honest, because I think a lot of the time, harking back to our good fatty episode, everyone wants to be like, well, I have a great relationship with food and everything's amazing. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't say I have a terrible relationship, but I know that it can struggle at times. I think comfort eating is something that happens a lot for me, and again, I think there's space for that. Mm-hmm. But I think sometimes it's something deeper that needs addressing when that's happening. For me, anyway, I'm not speaking for everyone. But I think acknowledging that sometimes you still struggle with your relationship with food. For me, I think I've always felt that whenever anybody wants to talk to me about food, it's just about how we make my calorie intake smaller, rather than that's how we talk about relationships with food. When you go to dietitians, unless you can find a body positive or a health at every size one, that's usually the conversation you're going to have, rather than like fixing the relationship that you actually have with food. And I think the way we talk about food makes something like intuitive eating a hard thing to relearn. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, for me, I'd say, you know, it's a work in progress. It's definitely something that I think I need to work on, and it's not something that's just going to come right on its own. I've got a lot of stuff to unlearn and a lot of things to unpack, but I think that there are ways to do that. So I'm optimistic.
I think it's the same as like how we talk about body confidence. It's something you have to keep learning and relearning and retrying at, and external forces are always going to make you question, and people in your life are going to make you have bad associations with food, and it's going to knock you back. It's a conscious effort to have a good relationship with food. I feel right now I'm probably in the best headspace I've ever been with food. A lot of it is down to my PT, Jack. Shout out to Jack.
Jack's like the fourth member of this podcast now.
I really hope he never finds this podcast. He would be shocked to hear some of the things that come out of my mouth.
As am I, and I'm still on this podcast.
Yeah, fingers crossed.
That's because you're a badass, Riv.
As Hayley mentioned, intuitive eating is something that I really, really try to put into practice now, because I am that person that if, for example, I don't have chocolate in the house, it's all I can think of. I want chocolate. And then the next time I see chocolate, I will eat so much chocolate to the point where I feel sick. I feel then guilty. I then feel chocolate is bad. I then demonize it again. I then try and get rid of it again. And it's a cycle. Whereas at the moment, I have more chocolate in the house than I think Willy Wonka has in his factory, because I was so scared at the beginning of lockdown that I wouldn't be able to get chocolate. And I've just kept topping it up without really depleting the stash. Knowing I have it there makes me feel good. And knowing that that's an option and not demonizing chocolate. And that's part of intuitive eating. There is a great book that the amazing Rosie Red, friend of the pod, gave me about intuitive eating. It's literally just called Intuitive Eating, but it's about not restricting yourself, because if you restrict yourself, then you eventually will crave that thing. You know, when you go on these crazy diets that cut out carbs or sugar, unless you can get to the point where you never want that thing again, you are always going to want that, but you're going to have then demonized that food group. And then when you do eventually crack and eat that food group, you beat yourself up. So that's what I try to do. I try to eat when I'm hungry, finish when I'm full, indulge in things, treat myself, go out and have nice meals, make those memories, look up recipes, watch videos, try new things. Like, I love food shopping. I love everything about food, and really immerse myself in it. It is fuel, but also for me, it's enjoyment, it's experimentation, it's everything we've already spoken about in this podcast. And yeah, I would say I've somehow got to quite a happy space tentatively. And Rivki, what do you feel now? You know, how does mayonnaise make you feel now? I mean, still not good.
Still not good most of the time. Do you know what? I'm such, I don't want to say a feeder in the fetish way, but I am such, like, that is how I show people that I love them and that I care. I cook. And nice. It's such an enjoyment for me. I cook basically most days for my family. I love batch cooking. To me, that is a Sunday well spent, apart from doing, you know, podcasts with you guys. But it's like a, you know, it's a day well spent if I've spent all this time in the kitchen and there's loads of meals prepped for the week and I really enjoy it. If people say to me, what books are you reading at the moment? I can guarantee you I've got like 4 cookbooks on the go. That is basically what I buy from Amazon all the time. I love buying a new cookbook. And for my boyfriend as well, he's super into cooking. He's an amazing cook. It pains me, but I think he sometimes he may be better than I am. Hopefully he just won't hear this episode. I tell him not to listen to it.
Either that or he's going to turn that exact sentence into his ringtone.
But we love cooking together. We cook on Zoom together because we can't be in the same room anymore. So it's such a huge part of my life. I think I've definitely started to get the whole balance of intuitive eating and knowing what my body needs and what makes me in the best headspace as well. I know how important it is that if I don't have a good breakfast or a well-rounded lunch, then by the afternoon I'm all slumpy and I can't do my work. So I really learned the after effects of what foods work for my body and for what I want to achieve in that day. So I think from how bad my relationship was with food to where I am now, complete 360. But like George, also supermarkets, whew, what a great day out. I love
Sainsbury's.
God, yes. You guys,
I miss those aisles so much.
Such dorks, I can't even cope. I think at the end of the day, we wanted to address some of the difficulties around dealing with food, but we also just wanted to remember food is such a big part of our enjoyment of life. It's how we connect. It's how we make memories. It's how we show love and appreciation. And that's, you've got to remember that when you're demonizing food. Firstly, it's a fuel. It's what keeps you going. And secondly, it's so much more than that. It has so much cultural significance. It has so much joy.
I love, for example, going to new places, trying their food. A lot of my memories of holidays are like, oh yeah, when I was in Vietnam, I had that amazing mochi. When Robbie and I were in Japan, we ordered way too much sticky rice in that restaurant. That's what those memories are. As much as like people can berate themselves for food and how obviously it is tied in with diet culture, now sit and think, how many good memories have you got about eating food with certain family members in certain places, trying things? That's what food is about, isn't it? You know, as well as fueling you, it's everything that comes with it. So guys, every week we will be shouting out some brilliant accounts that we think you should be following, because particularly this week, the only diet you should be on
is a social media diet.
That is it. Keep those carbs. They are your energy. Anyway, that's a whole other rant that I go on Twitter about keto diets sometimes. When we were prepping for this week's episode, one name came up very quickly when we were saying who should be our who to follow. And that is the amazing Jack Monroe, aka Bootstrap Cook over on Twitter. Jack started off just by sort of talking about the fact that she was on the poverty line and had all these sort of like cheaper like cans and like discount food and just random bits of food that she would find in supermarkets, you know, when they reduce things down at the end of the day. And she would basically have to make meals out of that because she didn't have the money to sort of be going after the extravagant items. And I think that is still how she cooks, and she's made so much success out of that. We will of course be shouting Jack out on our social medias, but yeah, we are at Fat Chat Pod and she is at Bootstrap Cook.
Okay, guys, well, that's pretty much all for this week. Remember, you can join our Patreon for bonus episodes and other kinds of content. And if you're a £10 and up member, you can pop over now and listen to each of us chatting about our ideal come dine with me meal and probably judging each other's.
Yes.
This has been a Secret Recordings podcast. We've got new episodes every Tuesday. Please make sure you're following us on social media at Fat Chat Pod, and don't forget to join our Fat Chat community Facebook group. Remember to subscribe wherever you're listening, and if you're an Apple, hit those 5 stars and leave us a review. We love hearing your reviews.
So this is one awesome review that we've had from Kitty's P Mummy, and she says, love you girls, I'm 50 next year and I finally promised myself to quit the diet. Woo-hoo! And accept how I am now. You are making a difference. That is music. Yay! To our ears. Thank you so much.
And this one from LilWitch40 says, thank you, girls. I follow you on Facebook and Instagram. You are all fantastic and such inspirations. Love the stories, girls. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
That's all for this week.
See you next Tuesday.